We will move on now to number 13. Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy C-3622, again, a briefing and public comment. Mr. Warren.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter, commissioners, directors, Ron Warren in the director's office. Just to start off, prior to handing this off to Chad, we're back before you today to provide some examples of a request from us to you for some additional information about what types of possible modifications you may be seeking in the Willapa Bay policy. For instance, we're undergoing a hatchery policy review. Do you want to continue to have additional hatchery guidance in the Willapa policy? Among a lot of that is policy calls on how quickly you're trying to hit recovery targets, harvest rates, and what will we do there? And so what you'll see from Chad, I hope you'll agree with me that it's a brief but fairly in-depth look at some setups of themes of the policy that we hope to get some additional information back from you to give us some information to move forward to provide you the alternatives for consideration in the future as you continue to look at this policy. So I'll turn it over to Chad. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Good morning, Chair Carpenter, Vice Chair Baker, Director Suzwin, Deputy Director Windrope, and commissioners. My name is Chad Herring. I am the Anadromous Resource Policy Analyst, and I'm going to give a short presentation here on Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy C-3622. So give me a second to share my screen here to bring the presentation up. Okay. Is everybody seeing
this? Looks good, Chad.
Thank you, Nikki. So as Ron mentioned, I'm here today to talk briefly about the Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy. My presentation will be kind of split into two areas. I want to talk a little bit about the comprehensive review document assignment some requests from the commission as an outcome of the October commission meeting to add some pieces to that. And then, as Ron mentioned, move into a few items for possible policy revisions as also an outcome, a request from the commission to look at some things based on public comment and staff recommendation or staff coalescing some of that public comment. Sorry. So first I'll talk about the review document. So just to provide some background here, the review document was initially submitted to the commission back in August of 2020. There was a public meeting held on August 18th of 2020 to go over, provided a presentation to the public and took, comments and feedback from the public on that review document at that meeting. That culminated in a presentation during the September, Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting, a pretty extensive 60-minute, presentation, reviewing, the review document. As an outcome of that, presentation, staff was tasked with, providing, adding some additional language to the review document, most specifically, in the executive summary conclusions, portion of the document to more thoroughly describe the purpose and objectives and, provide some, background on whether those were met, in terms of the implementation and performance of the salmon management policy. So, we came back, in October, and provided another presentation detailing some of those additions, had commission discussion on that. As an outcome of that meeting, the commission requested staff add all the public comments that had been received over through the summer into what is now appendices number 7. Earlier, I believe during the month of November, that those revisions were made to the review document. It was sent to the commission and also posted on the commission webpage for the Willapa Bay Policy Review. So all those current draft iterations are available, as well as the draft that's under consideration today. Just to talk a little bit more in detail about what is in that Appendix 7, it's broken into two sections. One, all the public comment that was received by the agency, either through email communication directly to staff or through submission on the commission webpage for the Willapa Bay Policy Review, is the first section, and most of that, the focus was on the review document. And then secondly, after the September commission meeting, a press release was sent out on September 16th, and ran through October 12th. We collected comments all the way up through COB of October 12th. And really the focus of those comments were, should the policy be modified, and what sort of modifications were needed. That's in the second section of that Appendix 7 in the document. We received about 19 comments, mostly from recreational fishers, and the focus of most of those was around Forks Creek production, hatchery production of Chinook, wanting to see some more fish produced out of that facility. And then we had some significant submittals from some of these groups that you see here, the Twin Harbors Advocacy, in terms of letters that were attached, both submitted through email and through the commission as well. The Twin Harbors Advocacy submission really deals with North of Falcon process and the review document itself, inadequacies that they feel are not addressed in the review document. Then we had some submissions from the Willow Bay Salmon Advisory Group, just the commercial advisors, put forth some ideas of what they thought modifications were necessary in order to have an economically viable commercial fishery. Those suggestions were backed up by letters of support from Salmon for All and the Pacific County Commissioners. Once again, those were all emailed to the commission. I would be happy to provide, they're included in the review document, but if folks would like to look at those, I'm sure Nikki has a copy or I have copies. I'd be happy to provide if commissioners would like to look at those specifically. Moving on to the items for possible policy revisions. Once again, these were kind of coalesced just based on the public comment that we heard. You've seen this slide before. This is kind of a list of all the public comment that, and it's not totally inclusive of everything we've heard, but tried to coalesce a lot of the themes and everything that we've heard since we started this process back in 2018. Once again, as you hear on a variety of different topics, there is a diversity of opinion across all sides of the stakeholder groups here, from eliminate commercial fisheries to you know, they're not economically feasible. We need to make commercial fisheries more robust. You know, don't manage for wild fish, manage for wild fish. It's really all over the board. So this list isn't meant to provide any sort of priority. It's just meant to be just that, just a list of some of the things we heard. So commissioners can kind of understand the breadth and scope of the public comment that we received. And once again, a lot of that is included in the Appendix 7 that was added to the review document. So moving specifically into a few of the items that we may want to have some discussion about, further discussion about. I've highlighted about 4 of those here. Once again, not meant to be an all-inclusive list or be these are the only things. Just felt like these were some of the overriding themes that we had heard from all that public comment where issues are They mostly focus on Chinook, as that seems to be the focus of a lot of the conflict or discussion around Willow Bay salmon management. Not trying to minimize coho and chum management at all, but a lot of the focus from the public is on Chinook. So the first item here, the population designations for Chinook, those are expressly laid out in the policy itself. Just want to provide a little bit of background on what population designations are. Really, they were defined by the Hatchery Scientific Review Group, and they were meant to represent a measure of the biological significance of a population to the recovery across the whole ESU. Just to put that in context, Willapa Bay Chinook, Fall Chinook are part of the coastal Chinook ESU that includes Grace Harbor and some of the other northern stocks as well. Willapa Bay is just a portion of that ESU. In the document, it has Willapa River and North River as the primary stocks, with Naso River as the contributing. A little background on why that is. Those were during policy development. Those were policy decisions that were made. There is some basic biological information underlying those decisions. Wasn't any really robust habitat assessment or productivity assessments, anything like that done to inform those decisions. It was really just a policy call on what those should be, based on some basic biological information that we had at the time. And I would note that is a paradigm shift from what would previously been in place. Since about 2010, the Willapa Bay Chinook had been managed for the Nacelle River to be the primary stock. So it was kind of a paradigm shift there. Moving on to the next area, hatchery production levels, and this really falls in line with the population designations, as these production levels were based on achieving metrics associated with those specific population designations. We've talked a lot about this in the past. I would also note that this is very specific and in contrast to what's done in other salmon management policies. For instance, the Columbia River Salmon Management Policy or the Grace Harbor Salmon Management Policy. Willapa Bay is the only one where hatchery production levels are explicitly set in the policy document itself. In terms of Chinook, not a whole lot of changes to coho or chum production based on that, but there were some pretty big changes fall Chinook production based on those decisions, where reduced productions in the northern portion of the bay out of the Forks Creek facility from what had been a 3.2 million smolt release down to a 350K to hit those metrics associated with the population designation of the Willapa River system. We've seen through the review document as those reductions have really come into play, it's been had a pretty big effect on marine recreational fisheries and also had some effect on commercial fisheries in the north end of the bay as well. I would be remiss if I didn't point out that the guidance in the policy document about hatchery production levels has been modified as we've worked through kind of phase one of the policy implementation, those fishery years 2015 through 2018. Nacelle production was increased from 800,000 in the policy smolt release for Chinook up to 2.5 million by a legislative proviso that we got for the 2016 brood year. Modified again on a 1-year basis in the 2019 brood year by the commission as an outcome of some discussion as we worked through the comprehensive review there. We released for that brood year about 2.2 million fish out of the Forks Creek facility. And then for the 2020 brood year, we're looking at adding an additional 2.5 million smolt release for Chinook out of the Nacelle hatchery. And that's really to focus on prey availability and southern resident killer whale recovery as was discussed just in the most recent agenda item right before this one. That's really focused at providing some prey for those species that are in some dire straits there. As Ron discussed in his opening, a possible consideration might be to strike some of the specific hatchery guidance out of the Willapa Bay policy and look to the hatchery reform policy that's currently being worked on as guidance for management of hatcheries in Willapa Bay. What this does is it provides some consistency statewide. There's a vehicle in the current draft of the policy that designates programs either as a conservation mitigation or fishery supplementation program. So it really streamlines some of that process.
Chad?
Yeah.
Chad, if I may, Commissioner Thorburn has her hand up.
Please. Yes.
Yeah. Just a quick question. The modifications, those were only 1 year additions. Is that correct? They're not ongoing. So.
Yeah. Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Thorburn, thank you for the question. Good point of clarification. I should have mentioned that. The commission action for the 2019 brood year, releasing 2.2 million Chinook out of the Forks Creek facility, was a one-year action, just some interim guidance as we work through the comprehensive review. The legislative proviso from the 2016 brood year that bumped Chinook production up to 2.5 million is an ongoing. We have been doing that since the 2016 brood year, so 16, 17, 18, 19 brood year releases. And then for this upcoming, this season that just concluded, our target once again at the Nacelle Hatchery was increased they added an additional 2.5 million. So that would bring it to a 5 million release, once again focused on prey availability for southern resident killer whales. My understanding is that would be an ongoing target as we move forward. So hopefully that answers your question.
Okay, Commissioner McIsaac has a question, Chad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, and I do recall the 2019 brood year commission guidance being made, gosh, I guess close to a year ago, December, January, February, somewhere in there, was to preserve options while the comprehensive review and policy review was going on, and kind of anticipating that by 2020 in the fall, maybe we might be done. We're not there yet. So the idea, though, was to preserve options. In 2020, the brood year's eggs are taken probably by now. Is there been any action taken on eggs at Forks Creek Hatchery that would not still allow the same consistent logic that, hold on, before we do anything, let's finish this policy review? Or have those eggs been disposed of or transferred or what?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McIsaac, another great question. As you may remember from the 2019 brood year, we talked about that hatchery production was reduced, right? Back in the 2015 brood year. Part of the discussion and why that decision was made for the 2019 brood year was it was kind of our last chance. It was our last year, a five-year-old return off that bigger release. We did collect the target this year at the Forks Creek facility was 440,000 egg collection. That was to meet that 350 target with a little bit extra eggs taken for natural mortality that occurs between taking the eggs and smolt release. If I understand correctly, I believe there were some additional eggs that were taken this year, not nearly close to the 2.2 million. I want to say it's closer to 600,000 or 700,000 eggs, really to look at, to continue to collect eggs across the breadth of the spawn timing. So being unsure of how many fish we were going to get back, they took as many as they could get throughout the season. And then the idea was that we could always get rid of those eggs in order to make sure we were on target, but we weren't sure how that run was going to materialize. So we wanted to make sure that we got portions of eggs across the entirety of the run. But if that late run didn't show up at all, we didn't want to be left holding the bag and be short. So there are a few extra eggs on hand, but not nearly what we had like last year. And that's an outcome of those hatchery reductions.
Okay, well, thank you. And maybe we could revisit whether any guidance is still necessary to keep our options open again for another brood year until we finish the policy decision making. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Moving back to some information about hatchery reform policy. Even though Willapa Bay Chinook stocks and stocks in general in Willapa Bay are not ESA listed, the current hatchery reform policy that's under consideration provides a vehicle for hatchery genetic management plans to be developed even for those non-ESA listed stocks. I think there's some discussion about timeframes for when those would be done in those conversations around policy C-3619. One of the benefits of the HGMP development for these stocks would be would provide an analysis of risks and benefits associated with those specific hatchery programs, and as well as was discussed just under the last agenda item, provide some guidance for the department to develop some robust monitoring and evaluation of those hatchery programs. So moving on to the next consideration is the rebuilding timeframe. And this plays into a lot of different aspects of policy actions, most notably some of the harvest control rules that are applied, the 14 or 20% for Chinook impact rates associated with fisheries. So the rebuilding timeframe, the policy actions for Chinook in described in the document were intended to meet the management objectives in 16 to 21 years. So what that means is the management objective are the wild origin escapement goal. And for Chinook, that's 4,353. The policy actions in what that document describes for staff to implement and adhere to are intended to meet those objectives after 16 to 21 years. It's going through that process, implementing the policy, would result in us attaining those objectives in that time frame further forward. What those were developed and informed by public feedback. So during policy development, we went out to the public, we asked them through a straw dog questionnaire at a town hall meeting that we conducted down in Raymond. How quickly would folks like to see this, see these stocks recover? And the majority of responses, although once again responses all over the board, was they'd like to do it in the shortest time frame possible, 16 to 21 years. In hindsight, looking back at how that process unfolded, we asked this question first, and then we went about figuring out what we needed to do to make that occur. There wasn't a real robust discussion about what actions would be necessary to get to that until we'd already asked that question. And I think one of the things that we've heard in the public comment is there was a lot of consternation about folks weren't really aware of the pain that they would have to feel in terms of loss of fishery opportunity, as that being one of the main vehicles we had to achieve those objectives through the policy, to reach those objectives. So once again, we use the all age analyzer, the AHA model developed by HSRG, to try and look at what fishery options, what harvest control rules would be necessary in order to meet the objective of reaching those recovering to minimum levels of escapement in 16 to 21 years. And what we found was, by using this tool, was that during the first phase, as we transitioned through the changes to hatchery production, we could fish at a 20% rate on natural origin Chinook, and then that would go down to a 14% rate in successive years, beginning in fishery in policy implementation year 5, or what would be 2019, through the duration of the policy. What's important to note is the AHA model works on a long time scale, right? It plots out, you know, how these populations would react throughout 100 years or 25 generations of Chinook life cycles. There was some discussion at the last meeting about whether we should rerun AHA in order to better inform this discussion. Really, I don't think rerunning AHA is going to do anything different than what we saw the first time. We don't have a whole lot of new informative data that would refute or replace some of the surrogate data that we had to use in order to make AHA run. What we do have through policy implementation and monitoring programs that we put in place now is a better understanding of some river-specific harvest and impact rates associated with fisheries. We made some changes to the coded wire tag programs to better understand how those impacts or encounters in the marine area are associated with specific river systems within Willapa Bay. And all those tools are just starting to come online, as we've discussed before. We implemented those changes in 2015-16 brood years, and we're just starting to see the benefits of those as we collect tags in the 2018-19 and 2020 brood years. And that that information should only grow. Our understanding should only grow as we move forward in time and collect more years of data here. One of the things about the AHA model is it can't predict future environmental conditions. And I have a graph here on the right side of the slide that was presented during a policy adoption meeting in June of 2015 that kind of showed some of the uncertainty that could be reflected that we might see by implementing and just the difference in the environmental conditions. So what we have here is this is output from the AHA model itself. These are estimates of the Nassau River Fall Chinook natural origin spawner escapement per policy implementation year. So those run years down in the bottom, one would correspond to 2015 and so on. So those are specific years of implementation. And the blue line is what you might see under great ocean conditions. So we set the model and said, if we have perfect ocean conditions, great for Chinook across the entirety of life of this policy or the 21 years that we're looking at, these are the type of escapements based on some of those fishery management changes that you might see. And you can see the red line there is what might happen under poor ocean conditions. Now, as we've talked a lot, we haven't been in real good ocean conditions since that time frame, and as you can see in the review document, you know, those Nassau natural origin escapement values have reflected that. They've been down a little bit higher than what that red line would predict, but not much higher than where they were through the, you know, run years 1 through 4 or policy implementation years 15 through 18. So it was always assumed that adaptive management would be necessary given some of the uncertainty, both into the information that was used to seed the AHA model, as well as trying to predict what future conditions might be out there. And then lastly, the last thing I'll put forth is species harvest prioritization. So the policy expressly details, who species should be prioritized for in terms of harvest for fishery sectors. One thing I would notice is like in the Grays Harbor policy or the salmon management policy or the Columbia River salmon management policy, there's some actual allocation proportions that are included in that document with those. I'm not proposing that needs to be done here. I'm just saying it's a distinction from what's done in Willapa Bay, where there's more general language around how those species harvest should be prioritized. In this document, it's, management objectives first, right? And then for Chinook, after meeting those management objectives, harvest of Chinook should be prioritized for the recreational sector and then for commercial sectors if impacts remain. It's flip-flop for coho and chum, whereas one, you know, meet your management objectives, meet your escapement goals, your harvest control rules first, and then provide harvest opportunity for the commercial sector. And then if any impacts remain, provide those for the recreational sector. The problem becomes it only allows for harvest for those sectors down the list if impacts remain. And that's been the intent of that has been scrutinized heavily, right? And in some camps, it's been, you know, if one sector can utilize all the impacts, the other sector doesn't get any. And we've talked about that in previous years. And you might remember as an outcome of some of this discussion in the 2019 interim guidance, we received some guidance from the commission that absolutely shouldn't be the case, that one fishery's impact shouldn't preclude the others. But still, that's been a pretty big bone of contention in the policy itself. It's important to remember that in all areas, marine and freshwater, these are mixed stock fisheries. So in any point in time, you could go out and, you know, mostly for coho and Chinook, chum less so, but still during the months of, you know, end of September, October, November, you can go someplace and hook a Chinook, a chum, or a coho. So once again, having those harvest priorities can be quite limiting as we try to plan fisheries, especially given the abundance levels that we've seen. You know, it's been used to curtail Chinook fisheries or access for commercial fisheries. And in this year, as we've had really low coho forecast, we had to curtail some recreational fisheries because there just weren't impacts available after the commercial season and the management objectives were looked at. So just in terms of Chinook, you know, that was reinforced by some specific area and time restrictions in the policy. We've talked about no fishing here and no fishing here in certain areas during certain times, that the commercial fishery should only use indirect impacts to Chinook during directed coho fishing, provides them very little access to Chinook, which has really been the backbone in terms of the economics of their fishery historically. You know, coho run sizes have been extremely variable and can be both historically, and we've seen that through policy implementation. And it's also hindered a little bit the development of some of our fishery management tools. We've talked a little bit about a run size update model for Chinook based on commercial fisheries. Staff have been working on that. We have a little bit of progress. We don't have a tool ready to go for prime time, but right at this point in time, but that's it's hindered a little bit by the availability of collecting data for commercial fisheries across the entirety of that Chinook run to develop that tool. So with that, I think that's the end of everything I got, and I can take questions now.
Chad, I have a question regarding that run size update scenario that Commissioner Kehoe proposed. First of all, as it relates to using gill nets, which I'll state from my perspective are non-selective gear, how many years is it going to take to establish a baseline? I mean, it's going to take more than just a year or two to establish a baseline on what data you're getting. You are going to have a much higher mortality on wild fish because you can't differentiate wild and hatchery. Let me ask you this. You've been, and maybe that's the only way to go, but I want to throw out another idea. You've been monitoring the recreational fishery at the ramps. I know a few ramps that you have staff at checking recreational boats coming in. I assume you sometimes have people on the water, enforcement people. And I've also learned that you have had, as has taken place in Puget Sound, recreational, fisheries hired to go out and do test fishing. Can you speak to that? Because I think the baseline there might give us a little bit of a jump start on the run size update piece.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Carpenter. Great question. We have been doing all those things. I would say that the test fishery that we've done, we've utilized some department staff to go out and fish a couple of days a week, really as a validation tool for what we're seeing in terms of encounter ratios on our dockside sampling, hasn't been entirely productive. But the, as we've looked at in previous presentations and as in the review document, the CPUE on those fisheries has really not been good the last few years. The fishery just hasn't been performing very well, not nearly like it was in 15 and 16. So that has hampered our ability a little bit with those test fisheries, but that is something that staff have started to look at. As you're aware, it's pretty difficult to develop run size forecast models off recreational fisheries. We haven't been entirely successful where we've tried to do that in other areas. Not to say that it may not be possible here. That is definitely something we're looking at. We've got a minimum amount of data to start looking at that, and we've been kind of looking at those tools. We're just not quite ready for prime time yet. Still the work, some work needs to be done, and really it's about understanding. We've gone through this huge paradigm shift with all these fish produced in the north now to all these fish being produced in the south, and how that is affecting those run strength updates. I think we still need to have some better understanding of, but you're exactly right. We've got some information to start looking at that. And that tool, that understanding that it may be farther along than the commercial use of commercial data. In terms of your question about how long it might take, you know, we do have some historical data here that we could look at to help inform that. But I would say you'd want at least 3 years of fishing to be able to do that. But that's my thoughts at this point in time. I'd really want to talk to my technical staff to give you a really solid answer on what would be necessary to fully seed that model and have it ready for prime time, or at least for testing.
Chad, thanks for that response. I look forward for more discussion about that. Commissioner Thorburn, if there's any other questions after Commissioner Thorburn, great. Otherwise, I think we need to go to the public comment segment here shortly. Commissioner Thorburn.
That's right. We have public comment. Maybe I'll reserve my questions and comments for after the public comment then.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. Commissioner McKaysey.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not a question for Chad, but as we move to public comment, I think it might be useful to ask the public to think about commenting on what the commission decision is going to be here today. I went back and looked at the October minutes that we passed yesterday morning. And so today, as I see it, looking to make a decision on accepting the draft status of the comprehensive review as a final report. Should we just accept that and close that out as a final report or not? Secondly, to decide whether or not to keep the policy as is or proceed with making some changes to the policy. So some conscious decision about moving forward with any changes or not. And then if the latter, then to make some decisions as to what changes to pursue, what kind of options or alternatives we'd like to ask the staff to develop and come back with. And Chad's got those four slides, I think, at the end that get to that. But if there's public comment with particular advice on those three matters, it would be helpful. And then when we get done with public comment, I would hope we'd be able to make some progress on that to move it down the line.
Thank you, Commissioner McKaysey. Good comment. Ron, did you want to say anything or comment before we go to public? Okay, thank you. Nikki, would you please read the preamble for the public?
We will now take public comment from attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes for comment. Everyone is currently muted, so if you have questions, please raise your hand. If you're on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear you've been unmuted. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. I've had a little bit of a delay lately, so just wait a second, see if anybody's hand comes up. There we go. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started. I've got two so far. Go ahead. We've got Greg King.
Can you hear me, Nikki?
I can hear you.
Good morning, again, Chair Carpenter, Commission, Director Sue Swind, Greg King. sportsman, president of Puget Sound Anglers, Lower Columbia River Chapter, and fisher of Willapaw Bay. Fished this bay for many years. I caught my first steelhead in Willapaw River. Brings back great memories with me and my dad. What I'm going to recommend today is these policy changes that I would like to see, and I think a lot of sportsmen would like to see. And I've talked with commercial fishermen, Bob Blake, God rest his soul, Lance Gray, and others from Willapaw Bay. And we're in agreement that we could work together, and we could go back to the 350 at Forks Creek and do the same down at Nacelle. South Willapaw Bay is very dangerous for sports boats. It's not, I don't recommend anybody going down there. I fish in North Bay. I think if we went back to the old numbers at Forks Creek, and if we had any PHOS numbers, we could get the commercial sector to come in and take care of some PHOS numbers. We're not ESA listed. We don't have a tribal entity involved in this thing. And you guys know my passion for this bay, and it's wonderful fishery and recreational opportunity for sportsmen, and trying to work with commercials that we can achieve those production goals. That was $350 million, if I remember right, at Forks Creek, and we took a steep dive, and this was the direct result of certain groups trying to ban commercial fishing on the bay. And it's a failure. It's just a failure. The whole advisory group, even the recreational advisory group, know they made a big mistake when they did this policy back when it was there. I think we put in some of those things, and we work with the commercials, and they can fish the South Bay. They have for all those years. And like I said, if there's some PHOS problems, they could come up and do some fishing. And I think that would work great. I think we could start raising some more fish, because we got to make fish for orca whale, you know, and here's a great opportunity to do it. There's no ESA listings. So, you know, those are my comments today, and I hope everybody has a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Greg. You as well. Next, Nikki.
Next, we've got Ron Gardner, followed by Butch Smith. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay, am I unmuted?
You're unmuted.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up after Mr. King. The Willapaw Bay, I don't know, it's so problematic. It seems like problems are made instead of solutions. This bay on Chinook was never a Chinook fishery or habitat for Chinook. It was man-made originally for commercial, non-tribal commercial fishing. And that's what it was designed to do. And we had recreational fishers that fished on it earlier on. And Bob Lake and I have talked about this, and, you know, I'm sad of his passing, because I actually did like talking to Bob and talking about how to fix this. The worrying about why a wild fish that probably never existed in this fishery, it's not a pure DNA fish, and you're talking about a Chinook that's the same Chinook all up and down the coast. We have the policy that doesn't allow transfer of eggs from one to the other. I think that should really be looked at if it's not truly a wild fish. This fishery is made to be a fishery and not to try and make it a pure DNA gene fish that never was there. I would like to see this looked at to maybe allow use of other eggs in there and put this back to a fishery. And I'd like to see the sports and the commercials come together and work out a 50-50 something. Let's make this work. But just trying to treat this the same as all these other rivers that are, you know, that's kind of a mud flat in there. It's not a high water, big water river area where you have upper stream and all that like you do in the Skagit or the Ho or any of these other ones. It's made just to be a fishery. Let's make it a fishery. And let's quit trying to worry about commercial versus recreational. Let's start using tools to put everybody back on the water and do what this thing was designed to do, and that's to catch fish. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Ron. Next, Nikki.
Next, we've got Butch Smith, followed by Jay Lake. Go ahead, Butch.
Good morning, Commission, Chairman Carpenter. You know, I want to give a shout out to, I too miss Bob Lake, matter of fact, but I want to give a shout out to Chad Herring. A few years ago, I and him were thrust together and he probably didn't like me so much. And I probably didn't like him so much, but I got to say that, I have, really grown to appreciate Chad and his professionalism and his, knowledge on the bay. I understand he's not going to be there anymore, but you guys have got a true good one there. And I'll just leave it at that. But you know, the one thing that I want to say is, you know, it'd be great if salmon could read your policy and, but they can't, and maybe sometime, you know, somebody smarter than I can teach a salmon how to read a policy. And when we lock up, when we make a policy similar to the policies that we've been discussing, when we lock those down so tight and take the tools away from managers to not manage, I believe that's where the issues come. A lot of times we derive these policies out of, you know, a time where we have low abundance, where we have a time where, you know, we go through a phase of new employees or new commissions or new, and they thrust, you know, their wishes and well-beings on a policy. But the thing is we take the tools away from the professionals that, you know, that spent their life in fisheries, or a good portion of their life. And I think sometimes that's what we do here, and we're unable to react during bad times, and we're unable to react during good times. Particularly when I've spent my time back in DC to get Mitchell Act money, to get the Canadian, treaty money, help support that 50 million, which, you know, 10 million came back for habitat fixes, 5 million come back, and probably some of that money is available to the bay, and see surplus fish go for 10 cents on the dollar or less, and be sold in a store in Bellingham when sport fishermen could add another fish to their bag, but commercial fishermen could access those things when they're the most valuable. It really is disheartening. And so I'm not going to speak to a particular thing to this policy, but not to be able to move eggs around in hatcheries that are 2 miles apart, on a fish that's not genetically pure by no standards, in the biological books, with not being able to let the gillnetters go in there and do some mop up when there's surplus, or react fast enough so they can go in and do what they can, or raise a bag limit or whatever. That's really disingenuous. It goes against the grain of what we do, what we depend on our managers to do. So I would really encourage, out of this policy, you put the tools in this policy that it didn't have, or any policy moving forward, for people to manage fish, not only during the bad times, but during the times of abundance. Because, you know, our coastal communities depend on that. Our coastal communities depend on people coming down sport fishing, but our coastal communities count on our hardworking commercial fisheries, able to make a living, able for the money to stay here, able to get through to crab season or whatever they do. Because unfortunately, we'd all like to be able just to do one fisheries, but in this day and age, we have to do a multiple of fisheries. And so, you know, whether they make $3 or you know, whatever, it's important to make up the whole of their income. So please, whatever you do, make sure there's flexibility and allow fish, the managers to manage. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your comments, Butch. Take care. Next, Nikki, please.
Next, we've got, I'm guessing it's Jason Lake, followed by Lisa Olson.
Go ahead. Yeah, good morning, Commission. I would like to start off here with us putting the term natural salmon alongside wild salmon in Willapa Bay is, it's just deceiving the public. We need to go back and look at where these fish came from and realize that they were brought here. You know, I got a book, it's a Finnish heritage book out of Nacelle. And back in 1925, the Finns were out there trapping fish in the Columbia River to fertilize and for propagation in Willapa Bay. It also goes on to where they were hauling these fish, these eggs, in containers by horse and carriage all the way across to the North Bay from the Columbia River. And we're coming back in calling them natural fish. And all that's doing is just that word natural is destroying our coastal communities, economies, and opportunities. You know, and to be honest, if an attorney really looked into it, they might be able to find some legal discrepancies to be able to come back after the department for taking so much from our coastal communities by putting, making something up that is not truly what it is. It's just totally deceiving the public. And, you know, that's when you guys are, you know, redoing this policy, I want you to sit back and look at the legalities of that and the people that are putting this policy together. Look back at where these fish originally came from. Who were the immigrants that started the original king salmon runs in Willapa Bay? You know, there's nothing natural about my ancestors putting these fish in the Willapa. So that's all I got. Thank you. And happy holidays.
Same to you, Jason. Thank you for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next, we have Lisa Olson. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, sorry to ask that. On this form of Zoom, it's hard to tell if the mute's working or not. And again, one of the Pacific County Commissioners, coming to you mostly from an economic standpoint. We wrote a letter to the commission in October. And in that, you know, we stated that we really feel that part of the failing of this policy is in the very first section, where it says that in the first sentence, it says to achieve the conservation and preservation of wild salmon in Willapa Bay. And as several people have said, wild salmon is not, you know, it's not, we don't have the rocky streams and the, you know, the rock beds that salmon usually spawn in. And again, I've told you guys a million times, I'm not here to dive into the science of it because that's my job. That's not my job and it's not my forte. But I do know that salmon along with timber and shellfish and all the other natural resources in Southwest Washington in particular are the backbone of our county and many others. And what I would like to see, I'm absolutely thrilled to death that the commission is willing to take another look at this policy. I would like to see it used as a tool. I would like to see the preservation of wild salmon taken out as an objective because I think it sets the whole thing up to fail. Unless of course you're trying to eliminate the commercial fishery, which I think is for our communities is a lifeblood. It's, you know, it's a life sustaining, economy sustaining profession that we need here. We love the sport fishermen to come, but we need them both. And the commercial fishers are here all year long, and they're the ones that pay the school taxes and donate to the fundraisers and shop at the stores all year, not just, you know, 2-3 months out of the year. They're both necessary, and they're both beneficial, I think, to the resource and the economy. So, again, so happy that you as a commissioner are willing to take a look at this and maybe use this policy to be so that it will be productive rather than being kind of a very frustrating arbitrary tool that isn't working right now. Thank you so much.
Lisa, thank you very much for your comments. That wraps up the open public comment period. Commissioner Thorburn.
Larry, I have a question.
I was just calling on you. Go ahead.
Thank you. I have a question for the commissioner. You said take out the word preservation. There's also conservation as a goal. I think the thinking was to develop that sort of hardy, robust, if not native, natural origin in the hatcheries management. Would you support conservation and moving toward what the hatchery practices that use broodstock, natural origin broodstock, and that sort of thing as a goal of the policy?
I guess she must have hung up.
Is Lisa unmuted?
I don't see her on the screen.
Hold on.
No, she's still there.
Let me get her. Okay, she's unmuted. Go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yep, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yes, Commissioner Thorburn, I absolutely would support that. I think that the and correct me if I'm going off track here from what you asked, but I think that the hatcheries on the Willapar are long established, and they're very beneficial. We can be, you know, like we're in the orca crisis now. We can help with that. We don't have, as Greg said earlier, we don't have a tribal influence here. We don't have, in my very, uneducated scientific mind, I keep saying I see this as a win-win. I think we can utilize our hatcheries, and I'm absolutely for conservation. I just think that setting it up to be the main goal to, preserve a wild species that really wasn't indigenous, not indigenous, but, it was the coho and the chum that are really from the Willapa. I'm happy that we can raise them and send them out and keep them coming back and have them here. I think it sets us up to fail for that to be like a chief goal of the policy. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
I'm sorry. I'm having trouble unmuting myself. Yes, that answers my question. Thank you. I always appreciate your testimony.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Comments from the commission? Commissioner Linville.
Not me, sorry for my hands up.
Okay, your hand wasn't up. Okay. I see the director's got his hand up. If I may go to him, I'd like to get his comments. And then I see Commissioner Baker and Commissioner Thorburn and perhaps more.
So maybe I jumped the gun getting in front of all those commissioners, but I guess so be it. I'm going to be a little out of character here in that I want to answer some of the questions, or at least have you understand my druthers to the questions that Commissioner McIsaac started with. I thought about maybe signing in as an attendee and raising my hand there because that's really what these really are, just my thoughts. but it feels like we're kind of hung up here, and I'm watching to see if Ron and Chad kill their cameras because they're probably going to cringe at some of this stuff. Should we finalize the review document? Yes. We could tweak this thing until the next ice age if that's what we want to do. I think we're past the point of diminishing returns. Let's wrap it up and be done with it. Should we modify the policy or not? That's obviously your call. I'm presuming that you're going to want to make some tweaks and modifications. And then as somewhat almost experimental, I'd like you to kick it to the team and just have us come back with options with as wide a berth as we could have. Normally I wouldn't ask for that because it risks the bring a rock thing that we come back with something that's a non-starter. We've been around this long enough. I don't think that's a high enough risk to avoid it. You heard Butch Smith say we've got the best salmon managers in the world. We know how smart Butch is, at least on that question. 100% agree with him. We have a little more flexibility in this system than we have elsewhere. We know generally the tripwires that could take that flexibility away from us, so we want to avoid them. And so I would like to have as wide a berth as we could to turn our professional salmon managers loose and let them ply their trade and come back to you with a list of options and probably a recommendation as well. That's my druthers. This might go over like a lead balloon, but I thought I'd pitch it out there.
So Kelly, if I may, thank you for that. So what you're saying is you don't want a particular guidance from us today. You want to take it back to the team and let them be creative based on their experience, knowledge, et cetera, and get back to us. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, if there's any absolute non-starters, it'd be good to hear that. But every time we go down to one of these, we kick it around a while, and then when we move to the other one, we kick it around, and that changes our answer to the first one. And I just think we could debate the guidance so long that it might not work, but give us a shot and let us come back with something holistic that you could react to.
Okay, I agree. I see a whole bunch of hands up. How many of them could come down based on the director's comments? I don't see any of them coming down. So what I'll do is I'll go to Commissioner Thorburn, Vice Chair Baker. Oh, my God, everybody. Commissioner Thorburn first, then Vice Chair Baker, please.
Well, I want to start off by thanking Chad. Absolutely outstanding presentation, Chad, and I really appreciate that you pulled out suggested areas that we can consider for looking at. And I thank you, Director, for your comments. I very much agree with them, but there's some very general guidance that I'm going to speak to, and that is I've been troubled by this policy since the beginning, and those areas that you discussed really helped to clarify in my mind what my problems were. I want to see work in all three of those areas, designations, hatchery management, and the fishery management. I think we really need to kind of turn this thing upside down. So I'm very interested to see what staff brings up. Just starting with designations, your description that we really don't have a lot of data to support sort of the biologic decisions that go into the designations. And we made this radical change that you keep calling a paradigm shift, really for policy reasons. And then we've made sort of changes each year as a result of it. And likewise with hatchery management portions of it as well. Just points to me that we were maybe too prescriptive. So I look forward to seeing a lot of thinking and suggestions from staff in all of these areas, because I think this policy really needs major revisions. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. We'll go to Vice Chair Baker, and then we'll go to Commissioner Linville, Kehoe, Anderson, Graybill, and McIsaac, I guess, in that order. Go ahead, Vice Chair Baker.
Okay, so I'll be quick. I think that Director Susowin basically answered my question. The question was going to be to Ron Warren, sort of speaking about paradigm shifts. It is real unusual for somebody of Ron's stature to get in front of us twice in one morning and essentially say, what do you want from us? And after we have just beat these analysis of both the hatchery and the Willapa policies to death over years and years and years, like Commissioner Thorburn, I've been frustrated with that. So what I was going to do is ask Ron, you know, what do you mean, what do you want from us? You're supposed to tell us, make recommendations, and then we're supposed to have high hot policy aspirations, and then we're supposed to decide on a policy as we implement science and public input and our own basically constituencies. I don't think I need to ask Ron that question anymore unless Ron wants to offer an opinion. But what I'm going to do then is take Kelly's piece as the answer to that question and support it with everything I've got, because I don't see that as a lead balloon or even a trial balloon. I see it as the way that policy and interactions between staff and commissioners should work. So that's so I guess I'm withdrawing my question after speaking for about five paragraphs, unless Ron wants to say.
Ron's shaking his head no. Thank you, Vice Chair Baker. Commissioner Linville.
I generally don't weigh in on fish issues too often because of my lack of, you know, knowledge in the subject. But I do have a little bit of fisheries background. And I think what's interesting about Willapa is that it is such an altered system already. I'm always very, on any wildlife issue, I am always very interested in not forgetting that the human component isn't going anywhere and that coexistence means that the wildlife, the fish and wildlife have to coexist with humans too, because they're out there, they're on the landscape, and that's the reality. And so I would, because of the flexibility in this system, I would also, I just want to throw in my support for hearing what staff has to say, where we don't have the listing issues. And I'm not suggesting that Willapa is sort of an experiment, but I think this is a system that's already pretty altered, and so we could be thinking outside the box more here than probably anywhere else in the system. And so I would really encourage staff to, even if they're just throwing out outside the box ideas, I'd like to hear what those are, because I think this is, we're ever going to have a place to think about those. This is it.
Thank you, Commissioner Linville. So far, Kelly, you're batting 3-0. You're doing good. Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. The director is about ready to go 4-for-4 here, so batting 1,000. I'm going to tick them off. I agree. I think I'm in favor of finalizing the review document here today. Unless somebody's got some changes that they want to, and substantive changes. I am also in favor of looking at revising the policy based on the outcome of the final review document. And I do support the director's suggestion of having staff give some options. And I do want to thank Chad. I agree with Commissioner Thorburn. He did a great job of kind of hitting the issues that or concerns that I have with a policy. And if I may, I'm just going to tick through those. So that Chad and staff can kind of hear my perspective. Absolutely, the population designation, that needs to be looked at. I was new to the commission when this was discussed, and there were some major changes at the very end of the adoption of the policy that I did not understand. And so I think it's absolutely appropriate that staff kind of give us some different. I think Chad also hit on the rebuilding timeframe. Another thing that was changed at the very end of the policy development process, for reasons that I did not quite understand, and in my own personal view, may have some ulterior motives behind it. So that one, right now we're on that 16 to 21 year time frame. I think that's, in my view, that's way too aggressive and too disruptive. And let me just go on the record. We did hear some public comment about, you know, hey, let's dispense with trying to create a kind of a natural spawning population. Personally, I don't agree with that. I think we should endeavor, and I think we can still have a meaningful fishery for both commercials and recreationals, you know, provided that we extend that rebuilding period to something that's more realistic as opposed to Pollyanna. So that's one issue. And I think Chad is exactly right too on you know, what commercial priority means and what sport priority means with respect to the different species. This needs to be changed, and we need to look at different options. I think, and Chad did mention, and this is a big one for me, and I know Commissioner Carpenter had a question about this. We need an in-season update for Chinook. I know Commissioner Carpenter, you might have some ideas, but I think we need the staff to come back to us with things that work. I know there has been work done in the past, as I recall, on using the recreational Chinook fishery, kind of a catch per unit effort. It has not, maybe there's been more work done, but my understanding is that wasn't an avenue that was really providing good, reliable information. So that's a big one for me, and you've heard me say that. So those are my comments and where I end up at the end of the day. So, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Keogh. So I'm going to go to Commissioner Anderson, Commissioner Graybill, Commissioner McIsaac, and then I have something to say at the end. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. First off, with regard to the report, I think we could ask staff to go back and make edits to the cows come home. So I would think that we probably have the bulk of what we need, and I would say it's fine to wrap that up. You know, I think, you know, obviously it goes without saying that we're not as a commission, you know, in a full-time position and have the capabilities to writing any kind of a full policy. So, or comprehensive one. And so I like what Kelly has proposed. I would say that there's some key questions. One of which is, you know, what's the time frame we're looking at? And, you know, I don't frankly want to be in a situation of just kind of quote delegating this or handing it off or or ignoring it and then thinking the issue goes away. So I'd be looking for some kind of feedback from the director and the staff subsequent to this conversation so that we have a way to know what it is that or what the pathway is. And so the you know, coming up with a construct of what that kind of array or the development of different scenarios would look like would be important in some subsequent meetings so that we can make some maybe more informed kind of comments. I think the comments that I've heard from the different commissioners already are picking up the bulk of the issues, but I'd kind of like to see it kind of written down and maybe some of these scenarios, some of those would be picked up and other scenarios, they wouldn't be picked up. And I'd want to be able to kind of look at those to provide a more refined comment. So, but I'm good with the general direction.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Commissioner Graybill, please.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, Chad, you have really drilled down and specifically outlined the issues that need to be addressed in this policy. How many years have I chased you down in the halls at North of Falcon and stolen you away from those meetings to talk about Willapa? It's been going on for years, Chad. And, you know, when I look at your list of suggestions, they're not that different than they were 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Kelly, thank you so much for your willingness to step out of what you think may be your character and saying, come on, guys, listen to staff. You've addressed the issues. Let staff give you the recommendations. So much appreciate that. We could have been way ahead of this a long time ago, I believe, if we take that sort of posture with this. I identified at probably my second meeting that I was on the commission when Bob Kehoe questioned the designation of these hatcheries. And I knew right then that there was probably going to be problems. And any policy that allows one sector to use up all of the impacts and fish off the bay another sector, there's a problem there with a policy. And we saw that happen. So I really am looking forward to finally seeing staff recommendations that we can all look at and understand, and we can get this policy put to bed very soon. So thank you again, Chad, Ron, Kelly, for stepping out and helping us drill down to identify the problems with this policy. And I look forward to getting those resolved.
Thank you, Commissioner Graybill. Ron, I see your hand up. Did you want to go before Commissioner McIsaac and I or at the end? What's your pleasure? Okay, Commissioner McIsaac, please.
You're muted, Don.
There we go. How about unmuting first? By my scorecard here, with Commissioner Graybill's comments, I see that our director's gone 6-for-6, and I'm going to have him going 7-for-7 here. You know, Ted Williams was the last guy to bat 400 in the major leagues, and he was at 400 going into the last game of the year, which was a doubleheader, and they said, why don't you sit? And then you'll preserve your 400 batting average. And he said, no, I'm playing the doubleheader. And he went 6-for-8, and his batting average was 406. So, again, I'll agree with Commissioner Graybill. Thanks for coming up with that, Kelly. That's a great way to go forward. I'm in favor of the approach. Let me just say a couple of things about accepting the report as final. I think it's time to do that. The one exception might be there's a false Chinook escapement goal appendix in there where it's not clear if that displaces the old one or the old one stands or what. I'd like to keep that issue alive because it didn't show up in the report until late. But it's time to say that we're accepting a report that's what we'll use as a basis for our policy judgments. I think that's a good step forward. On the matter of deciding whether to keep the old one or move forward, obviously, I'm in agreement. Let's move forward. Depending on the timing of this, which I'll get to at the end, I don't know that we need to suspend anything or whether or not we have to revert to old guidance or what happens. We'd maybe take that up in February, which is when this is supposed to be concluded. That's before North of Falcon. If that happens, nobody has to wrestle with suspending or anything like that. So, and running through the other issues, I'd agree with what's been said here before. Commissioner Kehoe ran through a lot of them here. Let me just say a few things to make sure they're inside the world of broad. You said we had a broad authorization to come back with all kinds of alternatives, and where you can have a recommendation. I know Commissioner Graber was big on recommendations. When you do come back with recommendations, please come back with the why part of it, because that's could be a policy decision. But in terms of fishery management rebuilding plans, I agree with Commissioner Kehoe. And if the staff is looking at an exploitation rate limit like 20% or 14% in bay, I think that should not be an in-bay exploitation rate. That should be a total exploitation rate counting U.S., Canada, Alaska, Canada, Washington, Oregon, and saltwater, and everything on the inside as well. There's also some rates in there, like 10% for chum, coming back with some alternatives for that. Species prioritization, again, complete agreement. Let's make sure there's some language alternatives that does not, that says specifically this does not mean exclusivity. And some consideration for incidental allowances when something like what happened this year where the coho run was purportedly much bigger than anybody expected. We squeezed this thing down to 14% when it could have been 20%, I think. But anyway, what do we see? A lot of nice big coho going for cat food. Tangle nets has been brought up. When you go broad and you talk about the commercial fishing options, positive talk about alternative gear and tangle nets. I think even the commercial folks were supportive of that. Payback provisions. I don't know what I would advance any alternatives for payback provisions, but going broad, at least have one with no payback provisions. Population designations, I agree. Let's look at a spectrum of those and come back with alternatives on those and what it means if you change from primary to contributing here or there. Hatchery production levels, we had public testimony about the concept of a weir on the Willapaw somewhere near Forks Creek that would help on PHAS and PNI, some sort of an alternative that keeps that idea out there for discussion. If there's a fork in the road where you want to say, let's forget all the hatchery stuff and just have this be a fishery plan and fall back to 3619 for all the hatchery direction, I had been thinking that inside this is where you might get specific on what do you mean by balance and what do you mean by optimize. But if this leaves the Willapaw plan, then somehow that's going to have to be taken care of. So just to consider that. Lastly, throughout the language, going broad, take a look at the purpose statement, as Commissioner Lisa Olson said, and come back with some alternatives for language in the purpose statement and anywhere else where it sets a policy direction that has to be followed. Anyway, I think the idea is a great one. My question is, when do we hear something like Commissioner Anderson said, how about just a list of the concepts before we delve into them? Because maybe at that time, there might be a knife takeout and cut a few out of the herd. So I don't know if that's January or February. If it's not till February, we ought to be prepared at that time to say, well, what stands as we go into North of Falcon? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think you were prescriptive enough, Don. I see Commissioner Smith has it.
Broadly prescriptive.
Commissioner Smith, please.
Yes. In the interest of time, all the pearls of wisdom have already been spread out. So I concur with my esteemed colleagues without doing the narrative dance. And I, Kelly's now up to 8. So.
Okay, well, I'm going to just be very brief. I had 2 pages of thoughts on Willapa Bay. I do have a fair amount of experience in Willapa Bay, good, bad, or otherwise, but I'm not going to bore you folks with it today. I'm going to honor what the director requested, and I'm sure I'll get a chance to get my boat in the water, my oar in the water. I don't own a boat anymore. So I'm going to go to Mr. Warren, please.
Chair Carpenter, thank you. Director, thank you very much for the direction. We will get back to commissioners as quickly as possible when we have a timeline and some agendas. I'd like to do 2 things, and I'll try to take as little time as possible. I know Chad's been trying to get out of Willapa and Grace Harbor for the last 4 months or thereabouts. I'd like to thank him for a great job and a great partnership. He's been fun to work with, even through the most stressful of times. And I'd like to take the opportunity to introduce all of you to the new Willapa and Grace Harbor policy lead that will work for the Intergovernmental Salmon Management Unit under Kyle Addix and Mark Baltzell. And I'm not sure if Mark's in that or if he's not, but org charts will do the trick. Marlene Wagner has degrees from Evergreen State College in Humboldt. She's currently in the process of getting her PhD at Simon Fraser University up in BC. She comes to us not only with an extensive education, but some very diverse environmental and resource management experience, mainly in the Pacific Northwest, and we're really excited to have her. She got to hear your conversation, and now she has one hell of an assignment. So welcome, Marlene. If you'd like to say hello to the commission, you're welcome to do so. Just don't forget to unmute.
Thank you so much for that nice introduction. I'm really excited to be here, and I look forward to working with everyone and making a positive contribution. So it'll be nice to get to know you all soon.
Yeah. Thank you, and welcome.
Thank you.
Yes,
Chair Carpenter, that's all I had.
And be safe. Okay. Any other?